Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
Hello and welcome to the Green 19 Podcast. I'm Dominique Yates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. The Packers are prepared for Monday Night Football, taking on the Philadelphia Eagles. So that's going to be an intriguing matchup. And there's a lot of areas that we can jump into just with this team, the state of the team, as you get ready for, you could say, that home stretch of the season. I guess it's only fitting we backtrack just a second. We can talk from the trade. The trade deadline was on Tuesday, and I think that's an intriguing area for me. I wasn't really surprised either way. I guess the only thing I did think about, because of some of the injuries that have kind of happened over the past few games, not only Tucker Kraft, and then you saw Kobe Wooden go down and some things of that nature. I didn't know maybe they would explore maybe trying to bring a player in, but it's such a buying and selling type deal in the trade, so I didn't really know if the Packers had anything to sell as far as players or even draft picks. And Spoon, I just let you start it off. Just any takeaways on that, or even just your column where you said it's more on just the guys in the locker room?
Yeah, I think they were probably got more interesting guys than they showed interest in other people, but I think they decided to stay pat. Like, I think they could have traded a wide receiver. There's some wide receiver needs around the league. There's some edge rushing needs around the league. And I think they probably could have taken a chance and, you know, traded a Kingsley Enagbari or a Dobbs or someone like that. And I think they just decided that they're going to roll with what they got and that the roster's good enough and they don't want to deplete it with injuries. I mean, they got some guys coming back and – I don't have a problem with that. I didn't think there was anything. They were going to have to pay to get a corner. They're going to have to pay big to get a quality corner. There were a couple corners that were that are decent players. Roger McCreary, who was traded from Tennessee to the Rams, but he doesn't really fit what they do. He's a nickel corner, and they already have a nickel with Javon Bullard. He's kind of a man coverage guy. And I don't think they play a lot of zone. So I'm not sure that was in there. Michael Carter, who Philadelphia traded for, same thing. You know, nickel guy. He's going to probably wind up bumping Cooper DeJean outside. So there just weren't a lot of options out there. They're going to have Asante Samuel Jr. in, but I don't know, for a tryout, I think it's more of a medical exam. He's got some neck issues, I think, neck or back issues that I think everybody wants to look at before he comes back. So, yeah, and then defensive linemen, those are hard to get. You got to give something up to get a defensive lineman. I mean, look at what the Cowboys gave up for Quinnen Williams, almost as much as they gave up as the Packers gave up for Micah Parsons. So, I think they just need to roll with who they got, and then I think they need to get more out of the guys they got on the roster.
Yeah. Ryan, any thoughts at all from that?
They made their trade a week before the season.
Right.
You know, when you've traded for Micah Parsons, you have significantly depleted your capital. Y'all happen to notice what that Indianapolis Colts trade package for Sauce Gardner looked like?
Same thing, yeah.
2026, 2027 first-round picks and quality player, Adonai Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
Awfully familiar, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, who would you rather have? Now, hey, Sauce Gardner might be the best corner in the league. I'm not, but who would you rather have, Micah Parsons or Sauce Gardner? I'd rather have Micah Parsons. Same, almost, basically identical trade package. So they didn't have the ammunition to make anything significant. I do wonder, you know, if Tucker Kraft's ACL 2 days before the trade deadline might have spooked him a little bit in terms of getting rid of guys, you know? Mm-hmm. The memory of releasing Ben Sims a week before you actually now need bodies at tight end might have been a little too fresh. but I wasn't surprised. I think they made their trade a week before the season.
Yeah, that was just my biggest thoughts, just because of how things have kind of taken place right now with this roster. Just wasn't sure what route they might go, but as we had already kind of alluded to, really for a week or so, wasn't going to be a big surprise if the Packers didn't really do anything going into the trade deadline. And so you mentioned, Spoon, it's all up to the guys on the roster to step up and perform. And what better way to get a feel for this team when you do take on the Eagles? Because if there is one thing about this team, if they are a heavy favorite, don't pick them. But when they're playing up to their potential, they're playing, you know, high caliber opponents.
It's like the opposite of last year, basically.
It's the opposite, right? Yeah, you're 0-6 against the top teams.
No, but bad losses, but you can't beat anybody that's good.
Exactly. So I think that's the one thing alone with this game, why if the Packers win the game, I'm not surprised. But when I do look at this Eagles team, I mean, you talk about this with every team in the league, that they were trying to figure things out a little bit. They had a new offensive coordinator. They lost some of those veteran players, especially on defense, like Josh Sweat, some of those guys in the trade, you can say in the offseason. But when you look at the game in Minnesota, plus the last game they played before the bye week against the Giants, it seems like they might be starting to figure some things out, especially in the run game. Spoon, what do you have seen from this Eagles team?
Yeah, I think they did seem to get healthy, or at least systematically healthy against the Giants. They had a really nice game. Barkley, I think they've gotten back to realizing that Barkley is the centerpiece of their offense, and they've got to get him going. You know, I think they've had Jalen Hurts a little more under center, so that, you know, they could get that eye running game going. But, you know, they still are loaded with talent. They, you know, Howie Roseman, their GM, saw some weaknesses, you know, on their outside pass rush has been not what they had hoped, especially losing Sweat. And Nolan Smith's been hurt. I think, so they picked up Jalen Phillips, which is a good signing. And I think that's going to help them. He can help them right away. He's played in Fangio's system. He's a former first-round pick. He's a pass rusher. And I think we'll see him quite a bit on Sunday. I mentioned Michael Carter. They picked up him from the Jets. He'll probably move into the nickel corner spot. And maybe, like I said, Cooper DeJean will move outside. And they picked up Jair Alexander, which is just a
heard of him.
Shot in the dark. You know, I think Howie Roseman, I think, has always probably liked Alexander, and I think it was like, why not? Let's try it. The same stuff was going on in Baltimore that was going on here, where he couldn't practice, or he wasn't able to practice to his fullest and didn't feel himself. Maybe another change of scenery will help him, but I think what they're hoping is they get, you know, they're not going to throw him out there and he's going to be a starter. That's not going to be the case. If they need him, they'll use him, right. You know.
Yeah.
I think they're sort of like the Packers, except that they have this catalog of success where they've won a Super Bowl. They can dominate people, and the Packers don't have that. And so I think the Eagles can tap into that whenever they want. Now, they haven't always, but it's always right there.
Yeah.
And, I think the Packers, if they're playing their style of football that they've played the last 4 or 5 weeks, then, you know, they're going to get their butts kicked.
Yeah.
I think that's very well put.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly right about the Eagles. They are very similar to the Packers. And the reason why I'm not, like, jumping off this Packers wagon right now, even though there are reasons to, because at the end of the day, I do still believe in the talent. Like, there is talent here. What are the two most tried and true, tested ways to win in January? Have the quarterback, have the pass rush. They have both. So even with Tucker Kraft's injury, even with them playing down to two teams that they should absolutely beat, I believe in the talent, and I feel that same way about the Eagles. Like, for all the drama in Philly, for all the trying to figure out, I mean, it's amazing, Spoon, that they had to relearn that Saquon Barkley is the engine to their offense. Mm-hmm. I mean, what, a 2,000-yard rusher, the best
running
back in
the league? Doesn't every coach have to, though? Like, yeah. I mean, every offensive coach who wants to pass the ball and yeah. crazy forget about their running back at some point.
Just take Nick Sirianni by the shoulders. You have Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
Use him.
But they also, like, not to interrupt, but they also have the pressure of getting the ball to A.J. Brown.
They do. Yeah. Drama.
There's a lot of, and Dallas Goedert and Devontae Smith. So,
yeah. Anyway. So for all those things, like, I still do believe in the Eagles' talent. They are going to be a player in the NFC. The Packers are going to be a player in the NFC. Talent wins ultimately in this league. These are two teams that have it. So, but what I believe in more is a team. I'm not talking about this week. I'm talking about big picture. A team that has actually shown that it can navigate what the Packers are hoping to navigate, but they never. This group never has. This group has never navigated four playoff weeks. The Eagles just did. So there is an edge there. With that said, for this week, I do think it matters that you're getting him at home at night. It better matter. Like that's not insignificant. I think that you're going to see a refocused Packers team. Like, I look at these next 2 weeks, I'm almost more inclined to pick the Packers to lose in New York than I am to lose to the Eagles. Like, I almost feel better about picking them to beat the Eagles than beat the Giants. That's where I'm at with this team.
Who knows what team will show up? I mean, that's pretty much been the name of the game. And I guess especially when you get into December, you get into January, like, is that a recipe for success? It's just not. So eventually we'll see if that switch comes on with this
team. They
got to
get hot.
Yeah, they just have to get hot. And you have to start seeing those signs of a team that can win four games, you could say, down the stretch in the playoffs. So I guess I am curious when you look at the Packers offense, and I don't necessarily have a question, but I'm just kind of thinking out loud, and I would like you guys to even jump in and interrupt because you just kind of mentioned Tucker Kraft. There's always so much made about targets in this offense. There's no number one wide receiver, but it's clear Jordan Love, you could say if he has a guy right now, it's been Romeo Doubs with 52 targets. Tucker Kraft had 44. Then after that, it's Matthew Golden with 29. And then you have some other guys that they, you could say, have targeted. But some of the higher ones were the ones I just mentioned. So I'm wondering, how would they kind of navigate and how would they handle some of those targets? How would they spread it around? And even for me personally, I'm curious how much more would they use Matthew Golden? What would they do with Luke Musgrave in the passing game? There's just a lot of questions that I'm curious about. You know, start with you, Spoon. Just any thoughts when you think about some of those targets and how the offense will spread it around?
Well, the one thing about losing Tucker Kraft is now they don't have to hear about how they need to get the ball to Tucker Kraft. You know, I mean, and Jordan Love doesn't have to hear about it. They needed to get the ball to him. And they truly now have an offense where Love has to find out what the weakness is of each defense and truly scan the field, and nobody is a target. I mean, nobody is a prescribed target unless you have a really good matchup. Like, I think they could start – I think they should scheme a little bit with Watson and Golden. Mm-hmm. I think they need to get Matthew Golden going because – so he's gotten through, you know, his first half of his – first season, they didn't overuse him. You know, he does have a lot of snaps, but, you know, doesn't have a ton of targets. Now he should be starting to see a little bit more from him. And some of that's on him and some of that's on them. But you now have Watson vertical threat, Golden vertical threat, Musgrave vertical threat. And those three guys got to be factors going forward. You know, like Philadelphia. So Philadelphia's going to try to take away every deep ball you got, just like everybody else does against the Packers. Well, you have to use those guys and then take whatever they're giving you underneath. Run the freaking ball. Give the ball to Josh Jacobs. My goodness. Yeah. I mean, just give it to them. Yeah. And if they're going to keep playing you back like that, do that. I think when Jaden Reed comes back, and if you still have those healthy guys, then Jaden Reed's going to be wide open in the middle if you can keep having all those verticals. But you can't wait until then. You know, you got to start doing something now.
Yeah.
I'm all over the place here because there's so many different things that this offense is not doing well. But number one, get the ball to Josh Jacobs. Get it to him running the ball. Get it to him throwing the ball. He's the answer to your to the start of restarting your offense.
Yeah. So when you talk about all these verticals, the question here is, because that's on brand for this Packers offense. They want the big explosive play. They have a lot of avenues to that. What has not been on brand is, how do you stay on schedule? How do you keep the chains moving, mm-hmm. finish drives, right? Mm-hmm. And what is the solution to that? Josh Jacobs.
Oh, yeah.
It's been three straight games since he's had 18 carries in a game. I understand he's been dealing with the calf. But for Josh Jacobs, that is shocking. Like, this is a volume carrier of the ball. He need 18 carries is his floor in a game.
Rico Dowdle had 25.
Right? Like, that has to stop. You have to get back to volume using your volume carrier. And then if you blend that in with these vertical threats, that's your best chance right now, especially until Jaden Reed comes back, of staying on schedule and still hitting those explosive plays. I've seen a lot of doomsday vibes about this Tucker Kraft season-ending torn ACL. And on the surface, he was their best player. I understand it. But there are multiple reasons why it does not need to be a season killer. For one, let's go through them. If this was 2021, 2020, and his name instead was Devontae Adams, yeah, I don't know how you survived that. Because Devontae Adams for multiple years in a row here was the entirety of the Packers' pass.
And they schemed around him. They schemed to get him open.
Every option.
They didn't just scheme around him. The quarterback was looking his way every single time he dropped back. I mean, every single time. He was the entirety of this passing game. This for all the times that everyone has asked Matt LaFleur about target distribution this season – there's a benefit to not building your passing game around one guy. There's no one cog in this passing game that is so significant on a target distribution level that you cannot survive missing him. Even Tucker Kraft. It's just different than it's been in the past. For two, they have a great luxury of having a very talented second-round tight end from the same draft that not a lot of offense in this league. You lose to Tucker Kraft. And you got another guy that, like, you can put in, and Luke Musgrave had three catches on that game-tying drive Sunday. Like, he's very different than Tucker Kraft. But what he does is still very important in the modern-day NFL. He can stretch the field. He has that speed. This is going to be a huge opportunity for Luke Musgrave to show that he can do what Tucker Kraft did 2 years ago when Luke Musgrave had the lacerated kidney, missed six games. Tucker Kraft begins his journey to NFL stardom. So I'm not predicting that for Luke Musgrave, but he's talented and he's going to get a shot. And then ultimately at the end of the day, it's not about tight end play in the NFL. It's about quarterback play. It's on Jordan Love to maximize all the talent that he still does have around him. The great quarterbacks are expected to be the tide that lifts all ships. Can Jordan Love do that? That's going to be on him. I think he can. He's having a really solid year. He looks like a top 10, if not fringe, top 5 quarterback. That's the one piece that this offense could not do without. You have to have Jordan Love. They have Jordan Love, and he's got plenty of talent around him. Now you just have to maximize that. So there's – I'm not diminishing the loss of Tucker Kraft. He was their best playmaker. He was one of the best tight ends in the NFL when he went down with that injury. That is a big loss. But there are a lot of reasons where, in a different situation, that might be a season killer. It doesn't need to be here.
I mean, basically, for me, when you look at the tight ends, I mean, it has to be a collective effort. But if Luke Musgrave will stretch the field and make some big catches, if John Fitzpatrick can step up and block and make a couple of catches, maybe they get something out of Josh Wiley. They activated him. So, like, if all those guys can step up and help, then you should feel okay about the tight end room. But there's too many options, like you just mentioned, with the receivers. And number one, you have Josh Jacobs. If you can tap into getting those guys going and playing at a high level, like, this offense will be fine.
Jaden Reed had the best rookie receiving season in Packers history. Mm-hmm. And he's going to come back at some point. He's very different player. But there's no reason to think that the return of a healthy, rested Jaden Reed late in the season can't offset a lot of what you're losing long-term with Tucker Kraft. Like that is a significant add to this offense when it does happen.
Yeah. Big thing, you talked about Jordan Love, and I'm going to be curious to see how he continually grows. But more than anything, the big talk that I heard, even like Matt LaFleur mentioned it, is staying patient and just taking what the defense gives you. Like, they like to be aggressive. They like to push the field, push the envelope, but it's not going to always be there. So I'm wondering about Jordan Love and, well, that level of patience. Just sometimes you do have to dink and dunk. Sometimes you just have to take the short stuff and keep moving the chains. I'm wondering how he'll do that. It's going to be fascinating.
I think he did it in the Pittsburgh game. He showed he could do it in the Pittsburgh game. He did it for much of the Carolina game. He just got greedy, and his coach set a bad example for him, too, by going for it on fourth and eight.
Yeah.
You know, I think everybody has to be on the same page. And, you know, you can't – you can deviate. You can take your shots, but they got to be measured. Mm-hmm. And not into triple coverage, into the wind. There's just certain – got to be a little bit more selective. I think he's fully capable of doing all of that. I still think he can use his legs more to get some yards. He's going to have to be really selective in this game because Philadelphia is going to, you know, they're not going to, probably not going to blitz the heck out of them. They're probably going to keep their safeties back. Their corners are going to play aggressively. And then he's going to have to find somebody who's open, you know, and it might not be down the field. So, yeah, he's a big part of this. But, you know, LaFleur is a part of this, too.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. He has to give Love some better options. Some of those run-pass options with those screens are just – you got to get rid of some of that crap. You know, it's just not – is that who you're trying to be, is a slip screen team, or are you trying to be a team that runs Josh Jacobs on a power run, you know, at the strength of a defense? It doesn't send a good message to be that finesse team. What sends a good message is, you know, fourth and three at the 8-yard line, you give the ball to Josh Jacobs, or you bring in, you know, all your tight ends, or you bring in Anthony Belton, and you put him at the end, and you just run the damn ball.
Yeah,
I think LaFleur has to have more confidence in them, and then I think they got to figure out what they need to do on the offensive line. I still think their line is not quite right. They proved pretty much how wrong they were when they moved Ryan to left guard to a position he hadn't even played. And the whole thing just kind of blew up. Everything was sort of off kilter. I think they got to get Morgan. I'm going to keep pushing, but I still think he should be rotating at least with Rasheed Walker.
I've been asking that for weeks.
At left tackle.
Yeah.
I just think that's where he's got to be. Now, who's going to be your right guard? I don't know. I don't know if Belton's ready to do it down after down, but I would want to see him on the field a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, if you're willing to put Stevie on Williams to try to grow him, then why aren't you growing your second-round pick, who's a massive human being and could help you in the run game? So I just think there's some things they gotta figure out up front.
It's so true. And that's probably the one group that's been probably the most confusing, mm-hmm. is the offensive line. Because on paper, at least going into the year, you said, okay, this could be a strength of this team. You would have felt, okay, moving Elton Jenkins to center, an upgrade from Josh Myers. You're paying Aaron Banks a lot of money, who's mm-hmm. been a good lineman. You're like, okay, you feel good at left guard. And for the most part all season, I would say Zach Tom has really been the only consistent lineman that's performed. I know Elton Jenkins is graded well, but even he would tell you he's been inconsistent.
He's been
at times.
Better since he said that he
played like
crap,
like Ship.
Yeah, I mean he's been much better, but you know he's also got that situation next to him where Banks is all of a sudden gone, and then who's he playing next to? Morgan, or is he playing next to Ryan, or is it Kennard?
Yeah.
You know, figure out what your plan is and stick with it.
Yeah.
And I just feel like they don't have a plan on the offensive line.
They don't. So that I think that I wonder if that also plays into the part of why LaFleur hasn't ran the ball enough.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because no. I was going to say, you have to be stubborn about it sometimes.
You got Josh Jacobs. It doesn't matter.
You got to run the ball. Like I looked at the Eagles last week. Saquon Barkley, he had 150 rushing yards because they were stubborn about it. They did their jumbo personnel. They just lined up and ran. And like you said, the Packers just do that.
No,
why can't
it,
you
it
do
doesn't
that?
Matter because Josh Jacobs is a volume carrier. He's Josh Jacobs is not Aaron Jones. He can't have 13 right. carries in a game and just make a huge impact mm-hmm. on those 13 carries. Mm-hmm. Josh Jacobs is going to have you give him 20 carries, he's going to have 5 or 6, not 6, 7, 5 or 6.
I mean,
where he just gets stuffed. It's going to happen.
You said it, not me.
But it's like the battering ram against the castle wall.
Yeah.
Like you just keep battering. Keep feeding. And if you keep giving it to him, you wear that defense down over the course of the game. By the fourth quarter, he's going to be breaking some. He needs a volume. It doesn't matter if early in the game he's getting stuffed. You have to keep going to that well.
Yeah.
It just has to happen. So slip screens. What did Matt LaFleur say about the slip screen today? Feast or famine? And he's right. What he omitted from that answer, Spoon, is that the more you use them, the more feasty they get, less the more famine-y they get, less feasty, right? You need to pick your spots because if you keep going back to that well, defense is going to catch on, and then you're just tossing it out to a defense that is loaded up against that play, and you want to see what happened Sunday against the Panthers. So
I mean, we used to think that they had great blocking receivers, but I just don't think they're as good as they were. You know, I for whatever reason, Christian Watson can block.
Wicks can block. Yeah. But he wasn't
they've missed his block.
Yeah.
Heath, I don't know what's happened to him. He used to be I always thought he was a good blocker. He doesn't look like a good blocker to me this year. Golden, obviously, is not a good blocker. And Savion Williams isn't a good blocker.
I would say, too, though, it's tough to block when you telegraph what's coming.
Yeah.
And at this point, like, you can be a good blocking receiver, but if the defense knows that a slip screen is coming and they're shooting that, mm-hmm. good luck.
Yeah.
Right.
It's telegraphed at this point. But I think the most important thing in terms of what needs to be better on this offense, and it's a good week to talk about this because it was the Eagles game last year where Brian Gutekunst got his last sampling, this last taste of what this offense was and what it wasn't, and he decided it was the offensive line. Because they got beat up. And this offensive line was built to be dominant in the offseason. Before Micah Parsons happened, like this was the offseason of the offensive line. And it has been anything but. And, you know, for all of Josh Myers' inefficiencies, I'm not here to say Josh Myers was a great center. I think that the market showed exactly what he is and what he's valued in this league. It's not much. But he was always very good at making the right calls, getting, communicating, making sure everyone was on the same page from the center position, which is the job. And we've seen a lot of breakdowns on this offensive line. We've seen the communication hasn't always been up to par.
We don't know if that's Elgton Jenkins or.
I'm not saying it's Elgton Jenkins. I'm just saying that there was a center here who was very good at that part of the job. He is no longer here, and now you're seeing that happen. I don't know if it's Elgton Jenkins. Oftentimes, the center is making the calls. We don't know who it is. But we have seen a lot of those breakdowns. And that can't happen. You know, twice Sunday, the Panthers time up a blitz perfectly. Tip your cap to the defense. But you can't just say, well, they timed it up. What can you do? Like, you can't have these type of breakdowns on the offensive line. And then you have to win your one-on-ones. This offensive line has been far less than what it was supposed to be. And fixing this offense starts with this offensive line playing better, regardless of who's on the field. They got to identify their best five, but they also need whoever the five is to play better. Mm-hmm. That has to happen. And it has to happen this week because that Eagles defensive front is very, very good. It's lacking the pass rush that it had last year. But that interior is very, very good. They cannot get bullied against the Eagles.
You're going to have to figure it out on the interior. Because I didn't even mention, I think Rashid Walker has played better over the last few games. But other than that, Zach Tom has been consistent. But it's that interior, those guards and that center, that's going to be a big question moving forward. And like you said, when you throw it into this game against the Eagles. So as we flip it and look at the Packers defensively, I guess, are they ready for the tush push? Who knows? Probably not. No team has really been able to have success at that. That was kind of a thing that people were asking LaFleur about during his press conference. But more than anything, it makes for a intriguing matchup because of how the Packers run defense looked against the Panthers. And now you have Saquon Barkley, who is one of the best in the league. I mentioned he had 100-plus rushing yards. You're going to see that jumbo personnel. Mm-hmm. And so, again, it kind of goes back to you talked about LaFleur with the screen passes. Sometimes these coaches, they overthink it. It's like, oh, we were already figured out. Like, they have a game plan on us, so we have to kind of go away from that and do something more fancy. But sometimes you just need to line up and run the ball. So, and Jalen Hurts has had a good season, but
I bet they're going to do
they're
that
gonna run the ball.
Packers. Oh, yeah. They're going to sink mm-hmm. that offensive line on them, and they saw blood in the water from the Carolina game, and they're going to come at those guys. And if those, you know, inside linebackers aren't playing their best game, and if the defensive tackles can't hold up to double teams, then it's going to be a long, long day.
Yes, it is.
It sure looks like Colby Wooden back is going to be big because he's very important to their interior run defense. And I don't know that they would have shut down Rico Dowdle if he stayed healthy. But it would have helped. It would have helped significantly. So starting there, that's big. As far as the tush push goes, I spent last week kind of going around some of the defensive guys and just kind of checking their pulse on that play. And to be clear, nobody there is looking past the Panthers. They gave up 16 points against the Panthers. But just checking them, and every single guy is like, "Yeah, that play is hell." Like the questions. The Packers tried to abolish with some urging from the NFL this play during the offseason of the owners' meeting. They fell just short of getting this play out of the league. The league wanted this play out of the league. They just couldn't get enough support. So now that it is a legal play, now that it is here, that whole time of, okay, how much you hate the tush push, that was an off-season thing. It's here, you have to stop it. How do you stop it? Shrug emoji. Nobody's figured that out. The Minnesota Vikings went with basically a sacrificial lamb play, putting a defensive end on the ground and just saying, okay, pummel this guy with everyone else on the defensive line jumping over. And
I like that, by the way.
It looked better.
I like the idea.
Except Matt LaFleur was asked about it today, and he's like,
Spoon-esque.
Yeah, clearly it didn't help because they still got the first down. Like it did look better, and it looked maybe okay, but they still got the first down. Nobody's been able to figure this out. The Packers stopped it a couple times within the past few years, but on a whole, nobody stops this play. You can't let him get into third and one, third and twos. It's that simple.
That's how you stop it.
Now, it's going to happen because, like, if other teams weren't letting them get into third and one, third and twos, the tush push wouldn't exist, right? It does because they get into third and short. But that you cannot get him into third and shorts because nobody's stopping this play. It's just, I asked Colby Wooden last week, the leverage required to stop the tush push, how different is that than your standard play? Mm-hmm. Because leverage always wins. Low man always wins in this league. But there's a different leverage required. And he's like, yeah, it's basically like being a gopher. Like, you got to be under the ground, that kind of leverage to stop this play. It's an entirely different species of leverage when you're talking about stopping the tush push.
The key to stopping it is avoiding those short yardage situations. If you're going to stop it, that's how you do it. But
I guarantee you, if they get towards the goal line in one of those tush push situations, they're going to throw the ball off the tush push just to stick it to Micah Parsons. Serious?
Yeah. I they did it last year against the playoffs.
Isolate wherever Micah Parsons is and whoever he would be covering in that situation, and they're going to throw it. That's just kind of who they are, and they're going to put their stamp on the game like that if they can. But, the teams are getting a little closer. The Giants took the ball away from Jalen Hurts and got screwed by the officials who didn't give him the fumble. It was clearly a fumble. The Packers caused a fumble on Jalen Hurts. I think it was in the Christian Watson game in Philadelphia on that Monday night or Sunday night. And I think they stopped him at least once or twice in Brazil, maybe at least once. Mm-hmm. So it's not impossible to stop it, but I don't know why teams don't make Jalen Hurts, punish him for carrying the ball just like everybody does on a quarterback sneak. I mean, you should be jumping on top of him and whatever you can, slapping at the ball. So I'll be interested to see what their technique is.
Here's a fun question when you think about it. And I think I have my answer. But who would you choose on this Packers defensive front to fill the, if they go this route, to fill the role of sacrificial lamb? Because it can't be like Devontae Wyatt. Like, you don't want your best interior defensive tackle who's fresh off an injury to take all that force. Like, who – I was talking to Evan Williams about this. He's like, practice squad call up. Like, you know, it's got to be –
like, lay on the ground.
Yeah, like, who –
I'm putting Belton there. I'm serious. I'm putting Anthony Belton right there. Go ahead and see if you can push him out of the way. That's, you know, and why not use – I haven't figured out, like, go ahead and use some offensive linemen there who – are used to pushing off the ball with some force. You know, if you put Sean Ryan and Anthony Belton over the nose, why not? You know, I would think about it.
Who would you take, Dom?
Well, initially I was going to say Anik Barry, but then I forgot how big Belton was. So I do kind of like Belton as well. But, yeah, I just think, yeah, you need a guy. I guess the reason why I thought about Anik Barry, even though he does play in terms of, like, one of your starters, you wouldn't want to throw him in the fire. But, yeah, they need to – I, for me, more than anything, I think about what the Vikings did. Why not experiment with it? Mm-hmm. It's going to happen.
Yep.
Like, it wasn't banned from the league. They're going to run the tush bush. Why not keep them guessing? So I love throw out a lineman, throw out a guy like that, and just see what happens.
My guy would be Nazir Stackhouse. I think Nazir Stackhouse is your sacrificial lamb. I get that he's big, but also he's kind of low man on that defensive tackle depth chart. If you have him on the ground, he can better absorb some of that contact, too, with his size. And then you have Colby Wood and Devontae Wyatt over top of him. My pick would be Nazir Stackhouse.
That'd be interesting. So I do have another point on defense, because, Ryan, this week you did break some news. You had a scoop that they are, once again, thin in the secondary. Nate Hobbs is out. Just, you know, I'm not going to steal your thunder. You know, what did you hear from that? And just, you know, what was the latest that
you heard? Yeah, I'm told it'll be at least 2 weeks that he'll have to miss with a grade 1 MCL tear, which the Packers, he's been playing with through knee pain since week 4 in Dallas. Mm-hmm. So when I heard about it, it was kind of out of left field. I you know, he played 19 snaps against the Panthers, which was a significant uptick from the 4 that he played against the Pittsburgh Steelers after essentially getting benched. I know that Jeff Hafley said he wasn't benched, but Carrington Valentine got the starting job, played very well, and just kept Nate Hobbs on the sideline in Pittsburgh. Played 19 snaps, but he did pull himself out of the game late because of the knee pain, which he's, again, been going through since Dallas. Initially, they thought it was a cyst on his knee. He woke up Monday after the Panthers game and got MRI because it was bothering him, and they found a grade 1 tear. So did not practice today, obviously. He's going to be in rehab, and, you know, the team does want to see how the rehab goes. There's always a chance that, you know, it goes better than expected, and you'll see him before the 2 weeks. But that's the initial prognostication, is that for the next 2 weeks they will be thin without Nate Hobbs, which means no Philly, no New York.
Yeah. I guess as a side, you know, thoughts on just the secondary, especially now that you have seen more from Carrington Valentine and, you know, just how that kind of group stands.
I think they're okay. I think we're starting to see Hobbs playing more of like a dime package as the nickel, you know, as a slot guy. Talking to someone who's had past experience with Hobbs, I think the observation this person made was that he's too bulked up, that he just got too big during the time he was out. I mean, he is a big, muscular guy, big, you know, physical. And I don't know if he's like some kind of demon in the weight room or whatever, but that it was he's playing outside now. He has to be a little bit more of a limber, quicker, you know, and maybe has lost some of his quickness. So I'm interested to see. I don't know if I doubt that has anything to do with his knee injuries. But I am interested to see when he comes back whether, you know, there is any kind of, you know, whether that is addressed at all, if the Packers see that as well. But They'll be fine with Carrington Ballantyne's playing pretty well. You know, Nixon needs to be better. You know, when they bring their safeties up for the line of scrimmage, they got to come up to the fill the right gaps, Evan Williams.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're okay. It's going to be tough. Devontae, you know, A.J. Brown is tough. And if you remember, he scorched Jair Alexander in the opener
in
a big way. But I still think that they can handle it. They'll probably have to keep both safeties back. They can get through that. It's just if they could ever get Hobbs to where he was playing like he did with the Raiders last year, then there'll be a better team. He's not a savior, and I still don't think he's great outside, but he can be someone who can still help them down the stretch if they can get it out of him.
The fact that he's been playing through this knee pain sure helps to make more sense of Arizona, you know, when he doesn't have the burst. He doesn't have a good knee. Now, it's a different knee than what he had surgically prepared because of a meniscus early in training camp. So that's some silver lining to it. It's not the same knee. But he hasn't been right for a while. Like, that's with him. Like, his knee's been a problem for a month. So it makes sense when you see him, you know, not be able to put on the Jets again against Marvin Harrison Jr. down the sideline. Like, he doesn't have a good knee. He's been playing through it. Where his absence matters most is, yeah, they're fine with Keyshawn Nixon and Carrington Ballantyne, but they're one injury away there from having a guy that's never played a snap, Bo Melton or Kamal Haddon, in the NFL playing on the field. You're one injury away from really having your depth very much tested. And then, you know, to your point, Spoon, about his bulk, like, what Nate Hobbs does really, really well is run support. Now, it's a little less, obviously, when you're on the perimeter and not in the slot. But that's his game.
He's a physical guy.
He's a good tackling corner. He's a guy that's not afraid to hit. And this is what this defense kind of needs, is all hands on deck stopping the run. That absence could hurt.
I was thinking about Hayden. That was one of the guys, Kamal Hayden. I was wondering, would he get any snaps this season? I know he hasn't played, but he was another one of those guys. I know training camp is different than the season, but watching him in camp, I thought he did some good things, did fine in preseason. So thought maybe I would have seen a little bit more of him, but wasn't
too
sure.
I don't
think
that was the plan. I think they preferred to redshirt him and Bo Melton. You've got three guys that have played a lot of ball at that position. You just keep them on the field. But you always know, hey, if they're on the roster, if injuries hit, as they have now, if another injury hits, you might have to. I don't think it's their preference to play them snaps. I'm talking about Kamal Haddon, Bo Melton, but they might have to at some point.
Right. Which I guess I have a question. I don't know if it might be as is, or maybe there is a guy to make you think for a little bit. We kind of talked about offensively, but is there a player defensively that's not playing a lot, or maybe not at all, that you would be curious to see out there on the field playing more? I guess I can go first. If you don't want, Tyron Hopper was my guy that I was curious
about.
That was
in my head.
That was in your head, so I kind of stole your thunder. You guys got one?
At some point, they're going to take a look at Colin Oliver and see if there's anything there. He's very close to being ready. He wasn't practicing today, but they have to make a educated guess as to when they need him. Right now, they don't need necessarily an edge guy, but I would be really interested if they put him, Quay Walker, and Edrin Cooper on the field at the same time, because you have the ability to, he can play some linebacker. He was used as an edge, but he's a small edge. You have the ability to move those guys around and blitz them from all kinds of different places. I am interested to see that. I also think if they can ever find a spot, you know, it's another situation where they have too many guys, but Bretton Cox was a good pass rusher down the stretch, and he got hurt in week one, and then we haven't seen him since, and he's close to coming back. Like, they just, they don't want to open the window, and then 3 weeks go by and there's no openings and he can't really get on the field, and then he's done for the year. Yeah. So I don't know what they're going to do. I that might be something we start to see in late November or December if there's injuries. I don't think there's anybody out there that's going to change who they are defensively. I think they got the best players on the field, and it's up to those guys to figure it out.
Yeah, it's very different than how you feel about the offensive line, right? Like, I think they got their best 11.
Yeah.
You know, one of the
in the right positions.
Yeah.
One of the issues with Nate Hobbs is, okay, so he's better at the slot than perimeter, but good luck taking Javon Buller's spot in the slot. Not That's not happening, right? I mean, they've got their best 11. They know who that is. So, you know, the defense is not absolved from accountability here. They gave up 16 points, but they gave up 130 yards on the ground, a huge 19-yard run on inside zone with the game on the line. It's the third time this season they haven't made a stop with the game on the line, Cleveland, Dallas, and now Carolina. But the offense is way more of a mess than the defense. Like, it's not comparable.
No.
The defense has some fine-tuning to do. There's a book out on this defense. You don't test the pass rush. They've got to kind of still figure that out. But I look at the defense, a lot of fine-tuning adjustments. The offense, there's some major needs there.
Yeah, absolutely. And even for me, when I mentioned Hopper defensively, just because of this matchup with that run game. Like, you have a physical linebacker in Hopper.
Yeah, but I think Isaiah McDuffie can do that fairly well. Like, you don't want him covering, but he's a fairly textbook linebacker. You know, he tackles, he hits, he's in the right gap, he's sound.
Mm-hmm. So, again, it's just – it's intriguing. Obviously, offense, is there's way more question marks compared to the defense. But, yeah, you still have to have some guys that will step up and make some plays. So, as we kind of wrap it up, is there anything special teams that you're curious about?
Just find out.
Yeah.
I'm assuming they go with McManus. And, you know, McManus is going to be the guy because it's going to be 22 degrees outside on Monday night. And McManus has more experience kicking in the cold and bad weather than Lucas Haversick has, who played for the Rams for 9 weeks last year. McManus is going to be their guy, I think, as long as they, especially as they get into these bad weather games. The only way he won't be is if he keeps missing easy field goals. I mean, if he misses 49-yarder or 51-yarder, it's not great, but it's not the end of the world. If he keeps missing 44-yarders, then they got a problem.
You can have all the experience in the world in bad weather, cold weather environments, but if you're missing kicks, I don't know how that experience really helps you. And he's missing kicks in these situations. And, okay, if all things are equal, you stay patient with him because he's the guy that you've committed to, you've invested in. And he didn't just forget how to kick since last year. So all kickers go through this. You let him go through it. But Matt LaFleur has said that he is not healthy. He has said that he is working through things still with his kicking quad injury. And if that's the case, and you do have Lucas Haversick on the roster, I don't know how you don't kick him. Now, we'll see. Maybe Brandon McManus's kicking quad is good now this week. I mean, because at any point, it should be, right? Maybe this is the week. But if it's not, I understand Lucas Haversick being on the roster because ultimately you don't need the roster spot, but just because you don't need a roster spot makes it okay to waste a roster spot. And if your kicker is not healthy and is missing kicks and working through an injury, and you have a kicker on the roster who is healthy and, oh, by the way, in two games, perfect 10 for 10 on extra points and field goals, franchise record 61 indoors still, but could not have asked anything more out of him. And you don't kick that guy, you're wasting a roster spot. You never want to do that.
I don't think you're wasting it because, one, you never know how injuries happen. You always want to have a kicker on your practice squad in case on Friday the guy like McManus. But I also think if they are able to carry him, after the season's over, they've got a kicking competition next year for McManus. Mm-hmm. You know, as he gets older, then they've got Haversick and they don't lose him. There's a good chance they could lose him if he doesn't have to sign here on the practice squad. If they cut him, even if he clears waivers, he can sign anywhere he wants on anyone's practice squad. And he'd probably go to a place where you know, like the Rams or Atlanta, where the kicking situation is really tenuous. So if they could keep him throughout the whole year, I think that that's to their benefit, because then they get a whole offseason to see him, and they get to have him kick against McManus in training camp and find out, okay, you know, maybe he is the guy.
I think you are wasting a roster spot if your starting kicker is injured, not healthy, and missing kicks, and you don't use the kicker who is healthy on your roster.
But you know,
and Matt LaFleur said that. He said that Brandon McManus is not fully healthy.
Well,
and he's missing kicks.
Nobody is totally healthy, but he missed two kicks that he should have hit. I mean, two, what, 44-yarders? I think both?
I don't know. They were.
I'm going to give him a pass on the 57-yarder in Pittsburgh,
because
that was ridiculous to do it in the first place. So, I don't know. My point is that if he continues to miss, but sometimes guys have to work their way through injuries, and you don't get better just sitting around. I think it hasn't. It did hurt them against Carolina. Obviously, that would have been the game, but I can't say for sure that can anybody say for sure that the injury was the reason he missed it?
No, but he is injured and not healthy. And I understand the point of let him work. Do that in practice. Let him work through it in practice. If you have a healthy kicker who's been kicking well for you on the roster and your starter's not healthy and he's missing kicks, let him get healthy and let him work through that in practice before affecting games.
Yeah. It's fascinating because I think – but even LaFleur himself, he said – because he was like, why do you have confidence McManus is still your guy? He said he's seen it in practice. So maybe he is kicking well in practice.
But he's also not healthy by his own admission.
I know.
He said that.
Yeah. And it's going to be an interesting dynamic because – maybe it is weather. Maybe it was the Pittsburgh field. Maybe it was windy against the Panthers. And maybe it's just a cold game and he makes all of his kicks. And it's like, okay, you just can move forward. But like you said, if he keeps missing, it's something that you do have to continually revisit. There's no question about that.
The other thing is we don't know how Lukas Haversek is kicking in practice.
That's fair.
We have no idea.
They look pretty good in the games.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But we have no idea. You know, they're out there in the wind, and we have no idea if he's missing or if McManus is hitting the ball better. We just don't know.
Yeah.
That's one of the bummers about not being able to watch practice.
Yeah, no clue at all. So that's something with special teams I'm watching, and obviously this is a small thing, but as of the recording of this, Savion Williams didn't practice. So we're not sure what they'll do as far as with the kick return game or see if it was just a minor thing, you say, and he might be back at practice. But it is something to kind of keep an eye out on throughout the rest of this week before Monday. So, again.
Dontavian Wicks was back.
Wicks was back, yeah.
It's good time to get healthy at receiver, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, so that's what I was trying to think. So Wicks was back. Van Ness is still out. Hobbs is out. Marshawn Lloyd went out west to get examinations.
You think Dontavian Wicks plays this week? I mean, I know it's early. We got to see how he gets through the week.
Yeah, I think he does.
Yeah,
I think he's ready.
I want to see how he gets through just because he's missed two games. So missing two games and getting back with the soft tissue injury, I'm just a little curious there. I think Matthew Golden drops out of game with a shoulder in Sunday. He's back on practice. Like, I feel good about him being
ready. Yeah, Aaron Banks came back.
Kobe Wooden. Yeah, like a lot of those guys.
And Kobe Wooden told me after the game in the locker, he's like, I asked him, like, how you feel about Monday night? He's like, I'm good. I'll be all right. And he was very adamant he's playing. So I take him at his word since he's back on the practice field.
Yeah, so those are the few, that I'm keeping an eye out on. But, yeah, I do think Wicks will likely give it a go. Because today was the padded practice. So that's the biggest thing. If these guys can get through the padded practice. And
the next day, being able to still be on the field. We'll know Friday.
Yeah.
You know, if he's practicing Friday, I think for sure that he's on the right track.
It's a little bit better moving forward. So, guys, any final words, final thoughts before Monday Night Football?
No, just – bring on the Eagles. It'll be it's been a while since they've had like just a matchup against a power team. Mm-hmm. You know, their schedule was very fortunate the way it went with the two early games, you know, and now they got Philly and then they got Giants, right? Then the Vikings. And then Detroit.
Yeah,
so it's starting to get serious.
Spoon, I know it's still early in the week for it being Thursday. You know, we're doing this pod now because it is Thursday, but it's Wednesday in football world. Do you have any feel for how, any leanings on Monday night?
I can only judge by what the Packers, how the Packers have been playing and how the Eagles have been playing. In fact, the Eagles have had almost 2 weeks off, you know, to game plan for this.
Yeah.
That's going to be a challenge.
I'm going to take the Packers. And and this is coming more – I am – I've said this before. I'm clueless on this team right now. I really don't know what to make. I believe in the talent. I also believe they don't execute. They can beat anybody, they lose anybody. I don't know what to expect. I picked them to lose in Pittsburgh. I picked them to beat the Panthers by 17, and I was completely off base on both accounts.
Yeah.
This just – I feel like they're going to do the opposite of what I expect them to do. And I get your point, Spoon. Like, yeah, I mean, the Eagles should be in good position to win this. I would pick the Packers to win this game. I very well might pick them to lose against the Giants. I might.
We shall see.
Ryan, I would get a subscription if I were you, and you'll find out what my pick is.
That's what I was going to say. You want to know my pick?
I'm picking the Packers because I'm simply at a loss with this team right now.
Yeah.
They will zig when I expect them to zag. So I'm expecting, like, if it weren't for that, I'd probably pick the Eagles. But that's why I'm picking the Packers.
There you go.
I'm so inside my head on this team right now.
So to everyone, there's your one little spoiler from Ryan. But if you want to know who Tom Silverstein, who Dominique Yates and Pete Doherty will pick, get a subscription.
That's right.
We'll give you all that insight. It is. It's going to be an interesting game. It's just how will the Packers match up.
Who are you picking, Dom?
You'll find out on Friday or Saturday. Done. We got to ask our bosses when will he publish the prediction story. We'll find out then. But, I mean, I will say it on paper right now, it looks like a bad matchup for the Packers because the Eagles have ran the ball really well and the Packers struggled mightily in run defense. So we shall see. I might change my mind, so just get a subscription and you'll find out then.
I'm picking the Packers.
There you go. So Ryan.
No rhyme or reason.
But even then, yeah, so Ryan, we'll use your pick as just a way to pull the subscribers in.
Yeah.
So
am I alone or not?
As your one team.
Cliffhanger. Packers, the Eagles, or a tie.
Or a tie. Yeah. Boy, oh gosh.
I'm about to say, I can't even say I'm picking the team that scores the most points.
My mathematical skills are not good enough to deal with a second tie this season.
I know. I still forget to throw in the one. 5-2-1.
That was the worst.
Makes it difficult for me to know how many games they played because I'm always like, oh, wait, 2+2+1.
It had a bye week.
The worst thing about the tie happening when it did, and I thought about this immediately, is, God, this is week 4.
Yeah.
There's a long time to remember that one at the end of their record. It's not like it's week 16 or something. Like that's all season having to remember what their actual record is.
That is true. So yeah, this is week 10, correct?
Yes, it is.
You see, again, we get into that math. We get into that math, and that's where I'm already in trouble. So week 10, Monday Night Football, Packers versus Eagles, the defending Super Bowl champs. Let's get ready. More than anything, I'm not going to tell you who I'm picking. I just hope it's a good game. I just hope it's competitive.
Yeah. I think it will be.
Just the battle Monday night, prime time. I do too. I mean, it's prime time. You're at home. So we'll see what happens. And it's going to be a chilly game. So we'll see what happens. Even though Philly is used to the cold as well. There's no advantage there for the Packers. So we'll just see what happens when they line them up and play a little football. So everyone, we thank you for checking out the Green 19 podcast. For Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein, I'm Dominique Yates.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.